I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. The Baltimore County Public School System launched a website that allows parents to track their children's work. It's one of several initiatives that Dallas Dance, the superintendent, would like to see in the schools. He's our guest for the hour, and we'll hear about his drive to make public education in Baltimore County more technologically advanced. He's been to Washington to seek funding for better internet access, and one of his eventual goals is to provide each student and teacher with a laptop. We'll also talk about the implementation of Common Core standards, which continue to spark controversy and charge political debate. Dallas Dance, the Baltimore County School Superintendent, on Midday after the news. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here with you Monday through Friday, noon to 2 on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Hagerstown and Frederick, WYPO, the O for Ocean City, the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and streaming live online through WYPR.org. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. Interesting history, American history, in the second hour of our show today, a history, an ideological history of the Republican Party. Heather Cox Richardson, who's a historian at Boston College, has a really interesting book out called To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party from the Time of Lincoln up to Today. So that's what we'll have for you in the second hour of our show today. In July of 2012, more than 2 years ago now, Dallas Dance took over as head of the Baltimore County Public School System, and he's here joining us in the studio again. He was first our guest, the superintendent of the Baltimore County Schools, shortly after he took that job. It's nice to get him back in the studio to talk to us about the current school year, some of the new things happening in the public school system in Baltimore County, including Common Core standards, the implementation of a new set of curriculum goals that have been pushed by the nation's governors and the Obama administration. Common Core, we'll get a chance to talk about that, and also about the advance of technology in the Baltimore County schools. So, Dallas Dance, welcome back to Midday. It's nice to see you again.
Dan, thanks for having me back.
Yeah. You had a town hall last week, I guess it was last week, was with Baltimore County students, about 60 of them from around the county. And I thought I would start with that because I was curious how it went, what kind of questions you got from the students.
Absolutely. So, Dan, last week we had town hall meetings with not just our students but our teachers as well, too.
Uh-huh.
Every year since assuming the superintendency, I've actually twice a year met with students and teachers just to hear from them what's really happening. What are some issues, concerns you're having? What questions do you have? And I do it twice a year. We do it in the fall, do it in the spring, because we have 24 high schools, of course. And we actually incorporate middle school students as well, too. So last week at Lansdowne High School, we had high school students who was asking us, they were grilling me, all on college and career-ready standards. I really was loving
it. College and career-ready.
They were all over that. They wanted to know, how can we continue to partner with Community College of Baltimore County, our four-year institutions, UMBC, Towson, and so forth, and how do we bring that experience to high school students? They were worried about college affordability and how can they actually have access to it. How can we redesign the senior year? They had a lot of questions around what are our efforts around keeping them safe and our schools. They had a lot of questions around the new park assessments, which they'll be taking this year. And then the middle school students, they were actually talking a lot about the high school experience. How do we make sure that we get them prepared for that? There were, of course, a couple of bullying questions, and we talk about some of the mechanisms we have in place to combat bullying in our schools. But then they offered me some suggestions on increasing arts in our schools, and again, just making sure that our teachers and our administrators are prepared for working with our students.
The older kids are concerned about paying for college. Did that come up?
They did.
I know their parents are.
Well,
I wonder if they are. Do they? The kids talk about that?
They did. So I think a lot of them are thinking right now, you know, when I get out of college, what is going to be my student loan debt? You know, how can I make sure that college is affordable? One of the suggestions that came up is, as we're developing BCPS1, which is this single sign-on platform that will be for our students, our teachers, and our parents, and we've implemented phase one of that this year with our gradebook, how do we leverage scholarship opportunities through a scholarship portal? Great idea that I think we'll be able to implement over the next couple of years.
Did someone ask about that?
It was a high school student asking
about it. How do I get online information about scholarships?
About scholarships. They want, and we leave a lot of scholarship money just across our country on the table because young people just don't apply for them and don't know about those opportunities to apply for them.
The kids are really hip to technology, obviously. Did they ask about taking courses online?
They did. So they talked about our, of course, blended learning or e-learning opportunities to where over the next 2 years, we're going to have a full repository of courses that you will need to graduate. So if a young person needs, you know, English 11 in order to graduate, that course will be available online. They wanted to know that. But they also wanted to know, how can we have community college courses online as well, too? And so we have a great relationship with Dr. Kurt Nitus and the Community College of Baltimore County, where we're having just those conversations now about how do we redesign the high school experience for our young people to make college an opportunity for access for them during that year.
Explain something to me and our listeners, would you, Dallas Dance?
Absolutely.
Some students in high school in Baltimore County already are taking community college courses, or is this something that you're proposing?
They already take it.
They already take
it. We're looking
right
at expanding. So a couple of things, Dan.
Are those the advanced placement courses, or are those separate?
No, it's dual and parallel enrollment courses. So the advanced placement courses are courses where our teachers are teaching them, and they'll take the advanced placement exam, and if you get a 3 or higher, you get college credit. But we also have dual and parallel enrollment opportunities to where you can take a community college course while you're a high school student. And that's been happening for years with the relationship we have with CCBC.
I'm not sure I knew that. That has been going on for a long time.
And the system, of course, pays for it. Our General Assembly put legislative in Senate Bill 740, where actually we pay for up to 4 community college courses, or I should say college courses for young people, and it's free scholarship opportunities for them. What the kids were talking about, and I totally agree, is how do you expand that to more students? So how do you make sure that as students come into 9th grade from 8th grade, they're on a pathway so that junior, senior year, we're opening up their schedule where they can take those courses. And over the course of the next couple of years, we want to open it up to so many more kids so that we'll have our own faculty teaching some of those courses. And they get the community college credit and the high school credit at the same time. But I was excited. Last year, we graduated 18 students from Baltimore County Public Schools. And the day they got their diploma, they also got their associate's degree from Community College of Baltimore County. And that's, again, scholarship opportunities.
I'm sure I didn't understand that was in place. That's pretty good. They asked about safety, you said?
They did.
This goes back to your first day as superintendent, the first day of school.
First day of school
in 2012. More than 2 years ago with the shooting at Perry Hall High School.
Yeah, so, I mean, our nation has just been, you know, we've been dealing with how do we make sure that our schools are indeed safe for not just our students, but our teachers, our employees, but our community as they come into our buildings. And so through the efforts of our county council and our county exec, we've actually put a lot of emphasis and supports around making sure every door has an electronic entry system to get into the building. All of our schools didn't have that, but they do now. Making sure we have working cameras, and in our elementary school, we actually have cameras, which, you know, we do now. And over the next 3 years, we've actually gotten close to $10 million from our county executive and our county council to expand those those safety opportunities. But we also now have visitor identification systems in our schools. So you actually have to show your ID in order to get a badge so we can make sure that you should be in our school. But the next part of that work, and kids were really, really upfront with this, needs to be the social, mental awareness and health of our students as well, too. So we've been doing a lot of work about how do we get our kids access to more social workers, more counselors, more people personnel workers, so that as they're dealing with issues or concerns, we know about them and we can work with them and their families to make sure they get assistance.
So have you tried something new in that arena?
Since I've come on board, every single year I've actually added additional counselors to our budget. The county exec has supported it in his budget, and ultimately the county council has fully funded the education budget. We'll continue doing more of that work because we know that the mental health of our students is very important. So we want to make sure that we have supports in place that, again, if they need something, there's someone there to support them and their family.
Dallas Dance is our guest on Midday in this hour. 410-662-8780 is the phone number. If you have a question for the Baltimore County School Superintendent, you can also send us a question by email. That address is midday@wypr.org. Back to technology. So a question about the website that's been established so that parents can track their kids, right? Can see how they're doing with their schoolwork and their quizzes and exams. The last I read about that was in my newspaper, Baltimore Sun, in October, reporting there's a lot of glitches in a new system. So can you update us on that?
Well, I'll tell anyone, you know, anytime you're doing anything new, and especially when you're dealing with technology, I think we have this belief that everything is going to run perfectly, and it's not. I mean, you got to be upfront when there are issues, concerns, and you address them, right?
So, we found that out last year with the opening of the health insurance exchange in Maryland, But how bad was this?
It wasn't. What we saw, though, is we saw some technical glitches that, as because we worked with the service provider, which is Ingrate, and the CEO, who is Zach Posner, is a Baltimore County graduate. He graduated from Pikesville High School. He's moved back to the Baltimore County community. It was very, very important for them and us to work hand-in-hand to get some of these things solved. But what this does for us is, and when I got on board, my transition team actually highlighted this. We had about 7 different systems we were doing business from. So parents would have to go in one place for this. They'd have to go in another place for this. Teachers would have to go here and so forth.
You mean online?
Online, okay. Which we said, that's insane. Let's put it all together in one system. We call it BCPS1, and it's one single sign-on for individuals. And that's what we did. So you'll hear BCPS1 a lot. But we know when you're doing this type of implementation, it has to be a 3 to 4 year process in order to make sure that it's smooth. So the first aspect of that was the grade book. And so we had some schools where there were access to your child's grades, but every single school didn't have it. This year, every single parent has access to their child's grades through BCPS1. And that's just the first phase of that. But we've had, since the end of the first quarter, over 14 million grades logged in. Over half of our parents have already started accessing this. And this is K-12.
Half meaning about 40,000? How many?
Oh, roughly 55,000.
55,000. Okay.
Have actually logged in. They've actually become accustomed and acquainted to it. We've gotten several pieces of feedback from parents. And so what I really, really like about our partnership with Ingrate through BCPS1 is that if there is a feature that people want in there, send it to us. It's bcps1@bcps.org and say, hey, I'd like to see X added. And we actually look at it and evaluate to figure out if we can actually incorporate it. So it's a system that's actually being designed for us by us. But one of the great things, and I'm a parent myself, and I told people this, every parent deserves to see how their child is doing in classes. And so the other thing, too, is if folks go to our schools, you'll actually see students log in through BCPS1. They'll see their calendar. They'll see the classes they're taking. And teachers can push assignments out to kids, and kids can push the assignments back to teachers. But it's a new way of thinking about teaching and learning. And the remarkable part about this is that you see it in our elementary schools. So as we've designed STAT, which is Students and Teachers Accessing Tomorrowware, we are personalizing and transforming what the learning environment looks like for young people. You will see a third grader go online to BCPS1, be able to go to the reading block, figure out what they need to do during the reading block. But let's say they've already finished that and they want to go back to math. They can go back to math because that assignment's already there. And teachers can push out those work examples and assignments to kids based on their individual level.
They're doing that now.
They're doing that now. So, and that's individualized for kids.
I'm curious about the parents on this. So moms and dads always could take an interest in how their kids are doing in school. They could sit around the kitchen table at dinner and ask questions. They could take a look at homework. Mm-hmm. They could look at the results of a quiz or an exam. If they were interested, mm-hmm. they could ask for it. So I'm curious, are parents who previously didn't ask those questions or weren't as interested because it's online taking advantage of that? Or maybe you don't know to answer that question. I'm curious about who's doing this.
Well, I think parents always ask questions. The question was whether they were getting the
not
right
always.
Answers.
Not always. Well, you know, true.
Yeah, because
true.
It depends on how you're asking
whether
that question.
Whether the student's being honest, you mean?
Well,
about
it depends on how you're asking that question. What I see now, and I saw a parent just the other day at Mars, a grocery store right off of York, and she said, one of the interesting things is that before my child even comes home, I already know the answer. Right. So teachers have already updated them. They see what assignments their child is missing. And so now they're able to really figure out, how can I help my child and keep that communication open with their child's teacher?
And parents can communicate with the teachers through this website.
They absolutely can.
Now, what are the teachers saying about it? Because they have to input a lot of data, right? Right?
They do.
So something new.
True. So the secondary teachers, for the most part, were already doing this, right? So our secondary teachers, middle and high school, they were already entering grades through an online grade book. So just depending on the system you use, you were always entering grades. Where we've seen the big culture shift has been at the elementary level, because not all of our elementary teachers were doing an online grade book. They always had a grade book. In many cases, it was just paper pencil. Now they're entering it online. What we've done is we've worked with them. What we've said is that we're going to go this route, right? But we just want you to update it every 2 weeks. So we recognize the fact that you may not have something every single week to update parents on, but every 2 weeks, we want you updating parents around a child's progress. And because of that, and because of the supports we put in place, such as a STAT teacher at every school, and this is a professional development teacher that's at elementary, middle, and high, who works with the teachers on implementing things that we're starting, such as your online gradebook.
When Dallas Dance refers to STAT, that's Students and Teachers Accessing Tomorrow, right?
Yep.
That's your whole plan for upgrading the school system technologically.
That's
right?
Our plan, yes.
And for
outline.
The digital age, for the 21st, the remainder of the 21st century.
For the remainder of it.
And we have to talk about that some more.
Okay.
Because I know that's a big item with you. And you went to Washington recently to the Federal Communications Commission to ask for more funding for better internet access, among other things.
We did.
So we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about Common Core. I just read an article in the USA Today about how Common Core is splitting the likely Democratic candidates for president in 2016. We want to talk about its implementation in Baltimore County in Maryland with Dallas Dance. If you have a question for the superintendent of schools in Baltimore County, please give us a ring. This is a good time to call during this short break. 410-662-8780. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here with Dallas Dance, Baltimore County School Superintendent since July 2012. So youthful looking. Do people ever mistake you for a student when you go into high school? I'm kidding.
They don't.
I'm sort of semi-kidding.
Probably because they see
don't?
Me everywhere.
Okay. All right. Let's take a question from one of our listeners, Kevin in Baltimore County, on this very subject of technology and education. Kevin, welcome to the show. Hi.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'd really like to say to Dr. Dan's, you know, I really appreciate his taking on the task that he has in Baltimore County, and I'd like to extend that to his entire staff. Education is a very difficult thing in our environment today, and I think with all of the elements that they have to address, it looks not as a daunting job. Let's just say that one of the things that is true for me is that I have a child that has become one of your educators for the first year in Baltimore County, and I'm, you know, really happy for that opportunity. The information that you started with really revolved around bringing in technology into the classrooms for, I believe, my understanding is that it's beginning in fourth grade. And if I'm incorrect, please correct me. And then that will be extended as the children graduate through to the 12th grade. Is that correct?
So in our lighthouse schools, we actually have our technology being implemented in grades 1, 2, and 3.
What's a lighthouse school?
Lighthouse schools are our 10 elementary schools who are actually starting STAT for us, or students and teachers, of course, accessing tomorrow.
Okay.
I think what Kevin is talking about, in 10 of our passport schools, we have fourth graders who are learning Spanish instruction over the course of fourth and fifth grade, and we've started that in 10 additional schools at the fourth grade level.
Okay, and tell us about the Lighthouse Project. And a more general question, maybe what Kevin was getting at, and I'll ask you this, that, you know, there are some who express concern that the computer industry has effectively sold educators on the benefits of technology in the classroom. And some people wonder, have we gone too far with this already? Is it overrated? You obviously don't think so. You're pretty bullish on it.
Well, I think it boils down to why a school system decides to incorporate technology in the classroom, right? So there have been several school systems. They've gone out, they just purchased devices, and they've said, here, they're in classrooms. That's not how we've done it. And so when you decide to just purchase devices and put them in, you're doing it for the sake of just doing it, and you're not going to get your benefits that you actually want to do that. What we've done is actually figured out, what do we want students to know and be able to do? And based on that, how do they access that when appropriate through the device? So when you go into our 10 lighthouse schools, the interesting part is that you will not see technology being used every single minute of every single day. And it shouldn't be. I was having this conversation with Scott Phillips, who's a member of my business advisory council, just last week. It should be appropriate for whatever assignment and whatever you want a student to know and be able to do at that moment. So it could be where you go into a classroom and kids are in three groups, and then one group is with the teacher. And the three groups that are not with the teacher, they're using technology. Two of the groups might be using technology. One of the groups might be using it. It may be no technology being used at all. But it has to be appropriate. Students still need to learn how to read, how to write, how to speak, how to think. And in many of those cases, technology may be able to assist, but you can't get rid of a great teacher for technology. Nothing's going to replace a great teacher. So it needs to be incorporated and integrated, but it can't be the end-all be-all.
When we say using technology, we're mostly speaking of accessing information?
And that's what it is. So what we've we've said is that we have to redesign learning environments, right? It used to be, even when I was in school a short time ago, you know, the teacher would give us information. And based on that information, then we'd figure out what we'd do with it. Kids have access to the information now. We got to get them to think, how do I use this? How do I analyze it? How do I figure out what's good information, what's not so good information, and how can I apply that to whatever it is I want to be able to do later on? Or even how do I get through the situation that's in front of me right now? That's a total redesign of thinking of a classroom environment. Just with our principals last week, I was having that conversation with them.
Another question then is the concern about skipping steps. The technology aids and abets the student who wants to get everything done quickly without really thinking, do it fast, do it quickly, and skip steps.
Well, and the thing is, again, it has to be used appropriately. So a good teacher knows when someone's trying to make shortcuts, right? I think some of my teachers would always say, you know, look, you know, Dallas, you got to go back and you got to take care of this. A good teacher knows that. What we can do right now with using technology and what I like to say just leveraging it is that now we can have more authentic and deeper enrichment assignments for kids. So it could be that, yes, you've mastered this, but now you need to figure out how to apply it here. And so your assignment might look different than actually what another student's assignment might look like because you're further along. But what I see is this opportunity to use technology to catch kids up. So if a kid is reading on a second grade level and they're in fifth grade, we have resources and software that can help us catch them up. If we have students who are ESOL students or English for students of other languages, we can catch them up learning the English language quicker. Our students with disabilities can catch up. But what I also see is our gifted and talented students being able to accelerate and enrich their opportunities as well too. So where you go into classrooms now, you see teachers working really, really smarter. But what you really see is students taking ownership because you can't be in an environment like a student-centered classroom and not be engaged in that environment. You have to be engaged.
A question about $205 million. That's the figure that jumped out at me. This was a Board of Education approval of a $205 million four-year contract with a company in Montgomery County, right?
Yes, it was. It's our partnership with Daily Computers.
Daily Computers for what? For STAT, which you were talking about.
It's for STAT, but this is the interesting part. It's over a 7-year period. It's for devices. It's for tech support. It's for professional development. It's not just the technology. I should say the devices. So one of the things, and I was a teacher in a 1-to-1 environment. I was a principal, and I'm a parent in a 1-to-1 environment. Mm-hmm. So one thing I really, really see though is that you cannot have this successful if you don't have the tech support. Support that's different from the instructional support. So what we've been able to do, and this is really working with Ryan Yu, who's the president of Daily Computers, we've been able to have him provide the technical support in many cases, and then we have the instructional support from our end. But one of the things that really has to go hand in hand to make it work is you have to have somebody that if a device doesn't work, who does the teacher call? Who does the principal call? And it can't be the STAT teacher because their job is working with their colleagues to integrate in their classrooms and pick appropriate lessons to do that.
I get you. So the plan is, or the hope is, that students and teachers will all have laptops throughout the school system?
That's the eventual goal of the next several years.
7 years or more than that?
No, in the next 5 years. So our teachers, they have to have it first. And so last year, before they went home for the summer break, every single teacher got his or her device. They got that. We wanted to make sure our summer professional development was all geared toward becoming accustomed to it. I have teachers now who are not even in Lighthouse schools who they're using it in their classrooms daily now because they're getting accustomed to it. Their training comes first. But then we know you have to start slow in order to go fast with this, right? And I'm interested, and as a team, we're interested in getting this right the first time. And so with that, we took almost 2 years of planning for it. And the first year, this year, Dan, was all about grades 1, 2, and 3 in those 10 Lighthouse schools. Next year, our Lighthouse schools will bring in grades K, 4, and 5, so they'll be school-wide. But then we anticipate bringing on a few middle schools to be Lighthouse middle schools. So the fun part about this work is that if you're a teacher at another school, another elementary school, or principal at another elementary school, you can go visit one of your colleagues' schools to figure out how they're implementing to make it work. But then over the next school year, the 15-16 school year, we hope to be able to bring all the remaining elementary schools on board with grades 1, 2, and 3 only because our curriculum has been rewritten so that we actually have access through the devices to what we want students to learn through our curriculum.
Speaking of access, Dallas Dance, here's a question from Donna, one of our listeners, who's wondering how parents without access to the Internet get the information from the portal.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like you may have to go to a library, or if you don't have access to a computer at all, what do you do?
So there are a couple of things. So one of the things that we've been having internal conversations right now about is how do we create an app for parents around us. That was an idea that came from a student. And we know that over 80% of our parents have at least some type of phone access to in order to get the app.
So 85% have at least a phone.
At least a phone.
Do you know how many have computers?
The last one we calculated was roughly around 55% actually have home internet access. But okay. One of the things that we're working on right now is through our service providers figuring out how do we get low-cost internet access to parents. And across our entire county. So that's the next step that we're working on with that one. But we also know that we've leveraged STAT with our libraries. So if you go to a Baltimore County Public Library right now, the entire system that we have in place at our schools is available in those libraries. So one of the things that we've worked very closely on, Rob Stradling with the county IT department and Lloyd Brown, who's with our IT department, they've wanted to make sure that it's seamless when kids go from our libraries to our schools. So parents have access to it that way. But also we're working on right now, and this, you know, we hope to have some of this work done the next year, is how do we get low-cost internet access to our parents? We have it right now. Comcast has a great program through Internet Essentials. That's like $9.95 a month. But I know there are some other service providers that are looking at getting that access too. And then what we've been talking about is how do we get the word out and awareness out to our community that if a family can't afford that, how can we provide that access?
Was that one of the things you addressed when you went to Washington to speak to the Federal Communications Commission? This was sometime in the last month or so, the last couple of weeks. You're looking for funding for, I said internet access, but it's other things too, right? Wi-Fi, for instance. Well, I guess that's part of it.
Absolutely. So, Dan, you're exactly right. So one of the goals that the current administration has is to get, you know, 99% of schools connected over the next 5 years. And there's a program called E-Rate, and E-Rate was started.
E-Rate.
It was started several years ago by three senators. Matter of fact, it was two senators and a congressman at the time. But it provides dollars to our nation's schools to upgrade their infrastructure. So how do you make sure that classrooms are connected? And it's done a phenomenal job of that. But the reality is that our classrooms are still slow in their connectivity. So I was given an opportunity. Courtney Warlick came with me along with Jessica Wharton and their teachers at Hawthorne and Church Lane, respectively. They came with me to D.C. And in front of the FCC, we actually had to testify of why these dollars are needed for schools. And at the end of the day, the decision was made to raise the E-rate cap by $1.5 billion. So, you know, right now we have $3.9 billion a year going to our nation's schools to ensure that the infrastructure is there for online opportunities for kids. And it was very, very humbling for me to be there, not just talking about Baltimore County, but to represent superintendents and leaders across the country on why this is in fact needed.
You weren't there just for Baltimore County.
I was not. I was there.
Baltimore County gets a piece of that through the state.
Absolutely.
It comes through the state. Yeah.
Absolutely. So we do receive E-rate dollars, and it helps us with our infrastructure. And again,
what does that do? Does that put Wi-Fi in schools or faster?
Absolutely. You're talking about faster servers, Wi-Fi in our schools. You know, one of the things that is done over time is actually look at our phone service as another priority part of E-rate. But it's going to be really, really good in terms of a great equalizer that our kids, schools, and our classrooms can be connected.
Dallas Dance, you mentioned the Lighthouse Schools for a couple of times, but you also mentioned Passport Schools, and I wanted to ask you about that because there was another interesting story in the Sun about schools, not just in Baltimore County, but elsewhere, starting foreign language instruction in as early as third or fourth grade.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things we did when we got here was we actually worked with our community on developing our plan. It's called Blueprint 2.0, and there's a big theory of action in it. It's pretty bold. I mean, folks say, you know, that's a pretty bold move that you guys are trying to make. But two things have to happen. Kids have to have a digital learning environment that's equitable across the board, and kids have to be bilingual or at least bilingual, but in some cases trilingual, before they graduate. So when you see here Passport Schools, those are the schools where we're working on world language instruction. The Lighthouse Schools are the schools we're working on STAT. Now, all schools will eventually get this, but we were talking about how do you start it off. So the 10 Passport Schools, it's phenomenal to go there.
And they're all elementary
schools. They're all elementary schools. And so, interestingly enough, and I said this with our principals, many superintendents come in and they'll actually look at what do I need to do for high school, right? And so that's important. You want to make sure that you're touching kids before they leave out. But in order to make sure that you're building a foundation of what future success for the district looks like, you have to also figure out what the elementary system needs to look like so kids can, as they matriculate through the system. So our two big ideas around the theory of action start in elementary school. And this is where, again, we want to have Spanish instruction, particularly Spanish 1, taught in grades 4 and 5 for kids. But next year, what we're looking to do, though, is as opposed to expanding it across the board to all schools, we're only going to bring 10 more elementary schools on board. We're going to start slow to go fast on that one. Again, we want to make sure we're really, really hitting the standards that we want to learn in Spanish 1.
How did you decide on the first 10 Passport Schools?
10 Passport, 10 Lighthouse, they all applied for it.
The schools said they applied. They'd give it a try.
They did. They teachers voted on it, and students wanted to do it. Community members wanted to do it. The principal wanted to do it. And so they applied to be Lighthouse and Passport schools.
Did you have the faculty for it?
How
did you do that?
So the thing is, again, this is where we're leveraging technology. So in those 10 schools, we actually have two teachers who work with those 10 schools. And they're there one day a week with students. And then throughout the other parts of the week, they're working with technology to actually supplement what the teacher's been doing with them throughout the course of that week. So it's really interesting. You'll see a teacher engaging kids. And I had an opportunity to see this during American Education Week. You see a teacher engaging kids. And then the next day as they go into the lab or, you know, the next other day when they go into the lab, they're actually logging into personalized system through Middlebury, and they're actually figuring out where am I, and then how do I actually get to the next step. And then the teacher, again, of course, is supplementing that the next time she sees or he sees the student.
Is there significant evidence that this is all going to help education? And I ask this question because it seems to me that kids love technology, right? They love gadgets. They love touching screens. They love that they can access information, videos, anything so quickly, right? And it's exciting. You think this is making education more exciting to kids?
I would say it's making it more engaging.
It's dropping the boredom factor.
Well, it's making it engaging not just to students, but to teachers as well. So I've seen teachers who, you know, they may have been teaching 10 years or 15 years, and I mean, it's like a new light comes on every single day because they're trying something new. I've seen principals who've come up to me and said, you know what, I was going to retire, but I'm not going to do it right now, right? Because I see something that's really, really happening here.
Yeah, the principal tell you that.
I did. I had three. and it's really exciting to see sort of the foundation we're laying for the future generation of Baltimore County. So that's exciting to me to see that through.
We're going to take a break here. We'll come back and take some comments and questions for Dallas Dance, the Baltimore County School Superintendent. We haven't gotten to Common Core yet. We will after,
no problem,
after this break. And I have a couple of emails to read for you. 410-662-8780 is the number for Midday. If you have a question for the superintendent of the Baltimore County Schools now in his third season in Towson, Dallas Dance. A short break on Midday. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. If you have a question for Dallas Dance, the Baltimore County School Superintendent, 410-662-8780. Let's take a question here. This is Julia in Baltimore. Julia, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. My question is, when I was going to school, you picked your second language in high school because you kind of based it on what country you thought you might want to go work in. Or live in, or whatever. How does the superintendent expect a third grader to pick a language since there are so many languages for English-speaking people to learn? How does he expect a third grader to make a choice?
Thanks, Julian. First of all, happy holidays. In our elementary schools, actually, we're teaching Spanish instruction to all of our elementary school students. So a part of it was
there's no choice.
There's no choice at the elementary level. A part of it was scalability. Again, we have 110 elementary schools. And a most recent study that was put out is that if a student learns English, Spanish, and Mandarin, within the next 20 years, they'll be able to participate in over 90% of the world's economy. So one of the things that we've been trying to figure out then is how do we actually have our students to get that before they graduate? So what we're proposing and believing is that at the elementary and middle school level, if we can actually focus on Spanish instruction for young people, this will give them at the high school level the opportunity to continue with Spanish if they want, but they also can pick a third language if they want as well too. So again, being at least bilingual before you graduate from Baltimore County Public Schools, but in some cases being trilingual.
Is it done in other public school systems?
There have been a lot of public school systems that have started this work. So there have been a lot of dual language schools. There have been a lot of bilingual schools. Of course, with my experience in Houston ISD, that we had several schools going that route too. In terms of going system-wide, though, we said it shouldn't be selective. Every single kid needs to have this opportunity. I don't know many systems where the entire system is saying everyone will get that. It's going to be about equity.
Dallas Dance, the Baltimore County School Superintendent, is our guest. 410-662-8780 again is a phone number for Midday. This is a comment from Sohaila in Hamilton. She says, radical technology called the printed text, now available more readily on computers, was always in need of teacher explanation, has always been in need of teacher explanation and explication. We forget that teachers have always been the ones that open up and unpack information and data for students. To your point about how we always need teachers.
Absolutely.
We can't replace them with technology. We say this in the year 2014, but we'll see where we
True.
Are.
True. And you realize that comment said unpack the information. Yeah, so it didn't say the kids didn't have access. It's how do you unpack it? But that's nothing replaces a great teacher.
Common Core. Let's talk about that. I guess my general question is, how's it going in Baltimore County? It's such a general question, but I guess I'd like to know how's the implementation going in terms of teacher response? What are you hearing back from teachers about Common Core standards? Of course, you know, they're still controversial in other states. I don't know how things are going here in Maryland, but let's talk about your district, Baltimore County.
Absolutely. And so this dovetails very well into the teacher town hall I had last week when a teacher said to me, it's getting a lot better. Right. So, and I think when I talked to her on the side, she said the comfort level that teachers are getting, it's getting a lot better. Right. So we've had standards for years. We just decided now to put a name to it in several states. So the Council of Chief State School Officers, the National Governors Association worked to develop these standards. And ultimately, Maryland, we adopted them. This is just saying that we want our students to have access to more rigorous opportunities when they're in school. Right. In math and English, we don't want our students in third grade math to have 50 concepts they're learning. We want them to learn 25 and go deeper into them. So it's lessened that the number of standards that people have, but it's a shift. And when you go to new standards, and I've gone to new standards in two additional states as well, too, it is tough the first year because everyone's getting reacclimated to really what does it look and feel like. But it's getting a lot better. In our school system, we've had teams of teachers writing curricula for us over the last, year and a half. And so one of the things that...
So teachers are working on the curricula. You're not importing the curricula.
No. And see, I think that's been one of sort of the national guidance that's been missing in the whole Common Core conversation. It's not a curriculum. These are standards of what we want students to know and be able to do. Every single school system across the country or in states that have adopted these standards, they have to write that curriculum in terms of what does it look like for them. So in terms of a teacher's flexibility, they still have that, right? So a teacher still has to figure out, how am I going to plan for what it is I want them to be able to master? The standards are sort of the things that's sort of common now.
So the critics say, well, this is top-down federal government intrusion in local education and state education. We're going to resist it. At least one governor signed legislation opting out of the standards. I think that was in Indiana, the governor of Indiana. Others are complaining about it. And I mentioned this story in USA Today about Common Core dividing the field of likely Republican candidates in 2016 for president, with Jeb Bush on one side and I guess mostly everybody else on the other side saying we've got to repeal this. It goes too far, as I say, federal government intrusion. But when I've read several stories about Common Core in newspapers reporting on it, and it always comes back to the same thing. It sounds like those people who are opposed to big government are opposed to Common Core. Getting into the specifics, it becomes murky what exactly they're complaining about other than that general criticism. Do you agree with that?
Well, education has never really been politicized, and it has become that way because of a name, right? So I always have to remind people, anytime you throw a name to anything, darts are usually thrown. But I think
call this Obama Core. I've heard that. Yeah.
I think what I would say, though, is that you have a set of standards now that you believe that the nation's students need to know and master well. But what you want is you want school systems figuring out how do they actually master those standards. So one of the things that people have believed, of course, is that it's a national curriculum. They're standards. And states have had standards for years. And if they didn't have it in the early 90s, they actually got them through No Child Left Behind because it was a part of it. I think the fact that it became more political was when you had states actually applying for race to the top dollars. So when the race to the top dollars were coming in, and that's when a lot of state budgets and school system budgets were being decreased because of the economic recession, that's when it was actually tied to you have to adopt these standards. But, I think none of us will disagree with the fact that we want our kids, not just in Maryland but across the country, being exposed to rigorous standards and being able to compete, not just with kids across the United States and in their neighborhoods or their states, but across the globe.
So we had the push for accountability that gave us No Child Left Behind, and now the Common Core standards, which brings this to another level. And you're right. Probably the criticism linking that to Race to the Top money, that looked like the heavy hand of the federal government saying you have to accept this. But sometimes people forget, and you mentioned it a moment ago, Dallas Dance, that this came from the National Governors Association.
It absolutely did.
There's 46 states involved in
this. Yeah, the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers, which, of course, Dr. Lowry represents Maryland on CCSSO, they're the ones who came together and said, what is it that we want our students to know and be able to do? And then, again, school systems across the country were adopting them. But what I like, and I have to remind folks, this is not getting rid of local control. You'll hear a lot of folks say, you know, we don't want you to get rid of local control. And I'm a big advocate of local control. But with the Maryland College and Career Ready Standards, you still have local control. Baltimore County decides, you know, what we teach, you know, and how we teach it. We just base them on the standards. Now, this year, of course, will be the movement to where there's a new state assessment.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, because one of the criticisms of Common Core is there's too much testing. We already have too much testing, and now there'll be even more. What do you say to that?
So there was a recent article that, of course, was put out on the amount of testing and the number of times that kids are tested in school. You want to have common sense testing, right? You don't want students spending, you know, 30 days out of a year, you know, doing tests when you actually do the calculation. That's not the case with Baltimore County. So we actually give our students what we call the MAP assessment, which actually measures their progress three times throughout the school year. We actually, of course, give our students AP and IB and SAT tests during the school day. But once the PARC assessments come out and we actually get a better
sense
of that.
What does PARC stand for, by the way? I'm sorry.
Partnership for the Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers.
Okay.
And so, again, this is replacing the MSA. It's replacing the HSA assessments. This is the first year students are doing it. And so once we glean a little bit more information from those assessments, then we'll figure out what the interim assessments need to look like to make sure our kids are on track. But you want assessments that actually inform instruction, right? So I always give, and teachers laugh at me when I give this this analogy, but you don't want an assessment that's an autopsy. At the end of the year, it's just an autopsy. What do you do then? But we want assessments throughout the year so we can do periodic checks to make sure that kids are on track for what we want them to know and be able to do by the end of that school year.
Does Common Core prescribe a certain number of tests, a frequency of testing?
Well, you have the state assessments, but we've had that, you know, for years, Dan.
Right. But what about
in terms of the interim assessments
the criticism
throughout the year?
That Common Core requires more.
It's interesting enough, that's not truly been proven.
Okay.
So the thing is, again, if the former standards called for in third grade math, you know, 45 standards, and now the newer standards calls for 25, you're going into deeper. You're not necessarily teaching more standards to young people. But the assessment conversation, we have our state assessments at the end of the year anyway. Local school systems can figure out what the interim assessments, in fact, look like.
A question from Brian in Dundalk. He says, one thing I have noticed is that the Common Core leads us in a direction where we are not emphasizing common knowledge useful in critical thinking. What is your opinion of that?
The interesting thing about Common Core, and particularly in English language arts, is that kids now actually have to prove that they've read something. So, you know, one, I give the assignment all the time. A kids would have to read Letter from a Birmingham Jail by Martin Luther King Jr. And the assignment might be, tell me about a time when you actually faced adversity based on the letter. Well, I don't have to read the letter to write about the assignment. But if the assignment was based on the text and cite examples from the text that show when Martin Luther King actually dealt with controversy and tell me about a time when you had to, you actually have to go into it and almost read like a detective. So that's critical thinking skills and analytical skills that traditionally may not necessarily have been in curriculums before.
The rest of Brian's email is kind of interesting. He says, he notes that in Dundalk we have quite a few Title I schools. He says, I'm a role model for at least a dozen kids ranging in ages from 11 to 20. I have started rewarding my children, I guess he refers there to his own kids, with $1 per single space page for reports on any subject that they choose. Sounds like a freelance teacher. They have really embraced this with stupendous results. They have independently found resources and have had fun doing it. That's what you were just talking about. I would like to share this method with other parents who share my concern. Anyway, that's an interesting thing that Brian's doing there, I guess, on his own.
It is interesting.
Thank you for that email, Brian. Monica in Harford County, back on the subject of teaching foreign language in elementary school. Hi, Monica.
Hi. I was really curious when the expansion of teaching English or teaching Spanish or a second language as foreign language would go into maybe kindergarten, if any time in the future that would be looked at.
So, Monica, thanks for your question. And I will tell you, I totally agree with Monica. When we first had the conversations, we were talking about, you know, as early as pre-K or kindergarten. I think what we were trying to figure out is how do you leverage that and scale it? So knowing that, again, we have 110 elementary schools and you look at the staffing that might be required, what's the appropriate grade level to start? But I think Monica's right on. Research tells us that the sooner you can get students learning a second language, the better off they're going to be. Primarily, of course, with pre-K, where you're dealing with a lot of, you know, low-income and disadvantaged students, that actually helps them acquire English skills at a quicker and greater pace. But we decided fourth grade for a variety of reasons. One, again, scalability with the size of our system. But we also know at the kindergarten, first, and second grade level, we're teaching kids to read so that at the third grade level, they're reading to learn. We also knew at third grade they take their first state assessments, and so we wanted to make sure they were comfortable there. And then the fourth grade level, we knew that we wanted to make sure that we started figuring out what the middle school experience for young people look like. But there have been several schools around the country that have looked at, again, dual language programs or bilingual programs that start as early as pre-K and kinder.
Hey, a couple of questions about the physical plant, the actual schools themselves, upgrading schools, improving schools, and dealing with the overcrowding that we've been talking about for years, especially in the central part of the county, actually Towson and through that corridor there. I know there's been some back and forth between the county executive and you and the Board of Education on the spending for various plans. So where are you as of December 2014 and sort of addressing some of those issues with schools in the central part of the county?
Absolutely. So very timely question. Last week, Dan, with our Board of Education, we presented what we believe the next 3 to 4 years of capital projects for enrollment will deal with. When we started that work, of course, we were dealing with the fact that we knew we had over 6,000 students in the next 5 years that we had to anticipate growth from. So very good thing that you're anticipating growth because parents and families like what we're doing. They're moving in. I mean, they're sending their kids to public schools. Traditionally, the central area has been sort of the biggest area of growth. And over the last several years, the county has invested a lot of money to make sure that we had additions on schools and new construction in the central area. Sparks Elementary School is finishing up its 200-seat addition. Mace Chapel Elementary School just opened a brand-new 700-student state-of-the-art school, all for the central area. But what we did for our board last week is we talked about the fact that the southwest, the northwest, and the northeast area of Baltimore County are our biggest concerns, of course, with the growth. So in the southwest area of our county, we actually have a comprehensive capital campaign going on right now where we're going to be doing a replacement school for Westtown Elementary School, a replacement school for Relay Elementary School. We're working to move Catonsville Elementary School over to Bloomsbury as a 700-seat school, and we're going to build an addition onto Westchester Elementary School, in addition to a replacement for Lansdowne Elementary School in the next couple of years. And we believe that with that plan, we will actually address our seat deficiency in the southwest area.
Hmm. Is this proposed or it was approved by the board?
That was approved by the board for the southwest plan. For the northwest, we know that's, again, we have over 1,000 seats we need right now. The northwest area, we have a new elementary school opening in August of 2015. We propose a replacement for Reisterstown Elementary School and a replacement for Bedford Elementary School, in addition to an addition onto Cedarmere Elementary School. And we still know we have about another 500 seats we need to capture, but we think we'll put a major dent in it right then. The central area, we still have some overcrowding, so we're looking at additions that includes air conditioning at Oakley Elementary School and Pleasant Plains Elementary School. And for the northeast area, which, of course, I get really worried about, if you look at the development that we're looking at today, we have a need for over 1,300 seats. Wow. And so we're going to propose a new 700-seat elementary school in the northeast area and a study to look at what schools can we replace to actually capture seats in the northeast area as well.
Northeast,
too.
We're talking about Perry Hall,
Parkville,
White Marsh area. Mm-hmm. That 6,000 figure you used, that's anticipated growth over how long a period?
That was anticipated last year. So when we were looking at 2013, we knew we needed 6,000 seats in the next 5 years. And every year we update our enrollment projections, and we'll be updating our board next month with those new ones.
Excellent. Well, it's nice to have you back here again, Dallas Dan. Sounds like you're a pretty busy man with lots of things going on in Baltimore County. What was the best question you got from any of those students last week at the town hall? Was there one that made you laugh?
The best one I always get is, of course, why did you decide to be a superintendent?
Really? But they asked you that?
They asked me
that.
It's
like career day.
Then they always ask me, you know, what are you going to do to make us prepared or to get us prepared for when we leave Baltimore County? And that's our job. So it's my job, but it's also the remaining, you know, over 18,000 employees we have, too. That's why we work every single day.
Well, thank you very much for being here, and continue good luck.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me. Happy holidays.
You too, sir. Dallas Dance is the superintendent of the Baltimore County Schools. We're going to take a break now for lunch. That's the first hour of midday. Have another hour ahead of us. As I mentioned before, some American history that I think you'll enjoy in the second hour of our show as we look at the history of the Republican Party from the time of Lincoln to today with the Boston College historian Heather Cox, Richardson. She'll be joining us after the news from NPR. Right now, we take a break for lunch, brought to us every Monday by Rosina Gourmet. Since 1999, Rosina Gourmet has served handmade, locally sourced ingredients for their sandwiches, soups, salads, and vegetarian items. Rosina Gourmet is located in Canton. They're in downtown Baltimore. They have a place in Harbor East. Catering is available by visiting Rosina Gourmet, R-O-S-I-N-A Gourmet.com. Please stay tuned for the news, and then we'll see you, for, I hope, for the second hour of our show.